Dear Mr. Sprinkle, as I will mention in a covering note, I am without secretarial help at the present time, being retired from the Army. I am taking this means of responding to your request for what I know about the first Huey Cobra kill in Vietnam. My association with the Cobra goes far back beyond that, and I'm going to recount some of that to you in the event you should want to use any of it in your research article, or in the event you should want any part of it to back up other information that you've already gathered. As you may or may not know, I was the aviation officer and the commander of the 11th Air Assault Aviation Group in the 11th Air Assault Division from the time it was formed through its big tests in the Carolinas in the autumn of 64. During this time, we, of course, really gave the Bell Huey its first real operational ringing out, as we had the first ones in any numbers in this country assigned to our organization. This, of necessity, meant that I worked very closely with the Bell people during all of this period. We went through the normal growing pains of any new aircraft together, solving the first compressor stall problems when the engines began to hit 600 hours, going through other engine problems, going through tail boom cracking problems when the birds hit 600 hours, etc., etc. It was a very close association over a period of about 2 years. During this time, incidentally, Bell, with their own money, produced the version of the H-13 that they called the Scout. The two-place tandem bird, which you may have seen pictures of, that was in the Scout category. They built this thing, actually, in a partial attempt to sell it as a scout aircraft to the Army, but they also built it to help to sell the Army the idea of what they could do with Huey components in building a bird like the Cobra. A lot of interest, but never really got many plays. Well, of course, they showed this thing off to us very extensively in the 11th Air Assault, and in fact, we had it there and flew it for quite a while in some of our tests. The 11th Air Assault Division, in March of 1965, because I got promoted out of it, I was promoted to Brigadier General and went to Washington, where I became Director of Army Aviation, the principal aviation staff slot on the Army staff at that point in time. The 11th Air Assault, as you know, was converted to the 1st HAV shortly after that and went to Vietnam. It was while I was Director of Army Aviation that my first and most intense association with the Cobra began. To give a little more background, the Army had had the competition which resulted in the award of the contract for the Cheyenne to Lockheed about 9 months or so before I took over as Army Aviation. At that time, it was proposed that as an interim measure, because we needed, it began to look as though we were going to need a better gunship for Vietnam, a sort of a vague thought competition, if you want to put it that way, was held to determine whether we should or should not develop an interim gunship that could do a better job for us until the Cheyenne was in production, which of course was about 5 years down the pike at that stage of the game. Contenders under consideration were the Command UH-2 and a Bell proposal somewhat similar to the Huey Cobra. Cyrus Vance, who was then Secretary of the Army, made the decision that we would not go for an interim gunship, but would continue to use the Huey B C family until the Cheyenne came along. A lot of us in the field were very unhappy about this because we could see that we were going to get into Vietnam in a big way, and we knew we needed a better gunship than the B was providing at that time. We knew that we were unhappy about it, and possibly for this, but also I'm sure for many other reasons, they decided to build a prototype of the Cobra in one of their back barns with their own money and present it to the Army as an improvement of the Huey, using as many of the parts, particularly the dynamic components of the Huey, as they could. They put a lot of money into this, and it was a big gamble on their part. It was a very bold gesture, and one that, for my money at any rate, really stood the Army in great stead at a time of great need. I managed to build this bird in complete secrecy. I don't think anyone in the Army or anyone in industry knew about it until they were ready to roll it out. It was a fairly remarkable feat in itself, considering the competitive nature of the chopper industry these days. Hans Weichel and Duke Ducaye, then president and vice president of Bell, in inverse order, came into my office one day in, I think probably August or September of 1965, with a model of the bird, which I still have, incidentally. Told me what they were doing and asked for my advice and support as to the best way to get the Army to buy it. I was absolutely delighted, of course, that they had taken this step on their own. Work forthwith to try to get the Army to buy the aircraft. My first stop had to be AMC, Army Materiel Command, because they were the ones who would have to do it. So I went over to see General Besson, where I had a great deal of cold water thrown on the operation. I will not bore you with the details on this, but for a bunch of reasons, a large number of people in the Army staff did not want to see the Cobra come into the inventory. One, we were late in the year for formulation of the next year's budget. It was going to be hard to get the money squoze into it, and the bureaucratic types were opposed to it on this ground. This affected in some people in the logistics field, although I did get great support out of General Cesarek, who was then a major general in DCS Log. The R&D types were terrified of it because they were afraid it would endanger the future of the Cheyenne. And this affected the ops types and some other people as well. AMC was simply emotionally and dynamically opposed to the idea for a combination of all of the reasons that I've just mentioned. And this led to one of the bloodiest staff battles I have ever been associated with. We went through then about a 5-month period of studies, counter studies, operational studies, technical feasibility studies, buy-offs, and you name it. AMC managed to convince the rest of the Army staff that we could not buy this thing as an improvement or an improved version of the Huey, but would have to go for a new aircraft, and that would mean a competition. And we did wind up with a competition between the prototype Cobra, the Command UH-2, and the Sikorsky CH-3. The latter particularly the latter, were completely unsuitable from an operational point of view as far as I was concerned. I didn't think the latter would ever fly because it was going to cost three times the amount of the Cobra. And I was opposed to anything but the Cobra because I didn't think any of the others would do the job as well. Well, I said I wasn't going to bore you with detail, but this little exercise wound up with AMC putting the efforts of all their laboratories behind proving the fact that the Cobra wouldn't work, which they did in paper studies very adequately, that it would be more vulnerable than either the Huey Bravo or the CH-3, and so on and so on and so on. This ultimately led to our running operational fly-offs, which they objected to, and we had technical fly-offs and so on. It finally wound up with my four-star opponent and I calling each other liars before the Chief of Staff and the Secretary of the Army and a very, very heated sort of a period. Well, we lucked out and won out. General Johnson finally made the decision that we would go the Cobra route, but we then, of course, had the problem of selling it to OSD. This was further compounded by the fact that Cyrus Vance, the gentleman who had decided not to go the interim gunship route, was now the Undersecretary of Defense, and he didn't particularly want to reverse his decision. But it was finally more or less agreed to put the money in the budget, and that if they could get the people in McVie, General Westmoreland, to state the requirements sufficiently strongly, that it might stand a chance of flying. Well, I was fortuitously transferred to Vietnam as the head aviation officer out there and as the first commander of the 1st Aviation Brigade at this point in time. So when I got out there, I was able to squeak an ensure requirement, which was the super priority requirement for Vietnam, through the McVie staff in that time frame and get the damn bird through. Now, I know that in saying all of this, I've stuck a lot of I's in here. I hate to beat myself on the back on this sort of thing too much, but there's really no other way of saying something like this. I'll simply have to state that I was probably more responsible than anyone on the Army side of the house for the Cobras coming into the inventory. So I had an intense interest in the bird and followed it very closely. I was looking forward with tremendous anticipation to the day that we got them in Vietnam because I knew that that they would help us in our effort to a very marked degree. Well, that day, the day of the introduction of the Cobra into Vietnam, came as it developed, was scheduled to be in August-September of 1967. I got word in August that my anticipation was really not going to be rewarded because I was placed on orders to go to Germany and leave Vietnam toward the end of September. The Cobranet team, with the first, I think, six birds, did come into country at that point in time, and I was determined at least to get a checkout in the aircraft and find out how she handled, how the weapon systems worked, and so on before leaving. So I did get the first checkout in country. CW2 JD Tommy Thompson was my pilot, and he put me through the full course of instruction on the bird. I think I got about 25 to 30 hours or something of that sort. I also, we did most of our instructional flight training at a little airstrip out close to Longton, I think. It was about 10 miles to the east of our early gunnery training up north of the Phong Bay River on the edge of War Zone 2. I found that the bird did come up to my expectations, and I felt it was exactly what we needed. God knows it later proved itself very well indeed. One of the things I used the bird for, and of course Tommy went with me as my IP, was to fly around the countryside as part of my series of farewell visits to my units. This served the dual purpose of making me happy and enabling me to better feel for the bird, of which I was very proud, and to show it off to people who had never seen it. There was great interest, of course, on the part of gunship pilots all over the country about the thing. So, in good measure, it was designed to show them the new aircraft they were going to get. On the day of the incident that you mentioned, on 4 September, we were on our way down to Canto to say goodbye to the aviation units of the 13th Battalion that I had stationed down there. We always traveled fully armed. Quite honestly, just in the odd chance that we might run into something. And also, quite honestly, because Tommy, much more than I, as a member of the NET team, was of course dying to be in on the first kill. Everyone on that NET team was a very highly motivated guy, and I know they had bets, pools, and all this sort of business, together with the prestige factors involved of getting the first VC with the aircraft. I don't want to sound unduly esoteric, but I really was not motivated by that sort of thing myself. The fact that I was aboard when we got the first kill was more or less accidental. Although, when we happened upon the action, of course, I became intensely interested in seeing what the aircraft would do. At this juncture that I was very familiar with all aspects of getting in on other people's fights, because in the course of my almost 2 years in Vietnam, I flew with about every gun platoon we had in the country. My personal bird was a Huey Charlie model without weapons, but I quite frequently used to pin myself on the end of daisy chains of gunships, using the door guns to help to augment their fire a little bit, but more than that, to show them that the boss was interested and that the flag a little bit. So, as we were on our way down to Canto that day, we were somewhat amazed to see an action going on right on Highway 4. Northeast of Canto, as you say. There was a gun team, a whole platoon, I guess, and I've forgotten who they were, but I think they were the Vikings. They were working over a clump of bushes on a little island about a half mile off the road. What had happened was that the VC had set up an ambush on Highway 4. They'd blown it and killed a few people, and the individuals involved were now trying to get away. The South Vietnamese advisory channel cleared sending the gun platoon in to try to get the culprits with the South Vietnamese. The gun platoon was working them over, trying to hammer them out of the thick mangrove and other junk that was on that little island at that time. Now, this area, incidentally, was right alongside the Plain of Reeds. It was an unpopulated area at this far, at any rate, and was fairly hostile territory. So They pretty well knew what they were going after. They were trying to smoke these guys out of the thicket into sampans, which was the only way they could get out. And try to dispose of them if possible. I came up on the guard channel on the radio, which all choppers in Vietnam stayed on all the time, and managed to identify the outfit that was involved in the engagement, get their frequency, and get the platoon leader's permission to join in the fray. Okay, this will be continued on the other side. Their speed, be able to maneuver as adroitly, as abruptly, as the really slower ships. And getting into the thing were twofold. First of all, we wanted to help them out. And secondly, I wanted to see how the bird would do in a gun team flight or string of slower aircraft, whether it could be thrown around as abruptly as the Huey, whether the increased speed would make it too difficult to work with a slower team, and so on. I found, incidentally, that while we had to swing out a bit on the turns in order to keep ourselves properly spaced from the rest of the platoon, that we were able to work very handily indeed with a slower gun platoon. Incidentally, I was flying the aircraft, and Tommy was manning the gunner's forward position. He did most of his shooting with the 10 turret, and I was handling the rockets. As I remember, we had 4 7-round pods aboard. I expended most of the rockets in the thicket on the island, Tommy using the gun on the brakes. We made about, 4 6, something like that, passes with the rest of the platoon. And I guess it began to get too hot down there because all of a sudden the guys on the island apparently decided to make a break for it. 2 or 3 sampans while we were swing away from the island made a break from the brush on the shore, trying to get down a short stretch to some other very heavy ground, heavily vegetated ground that was connected to what one might regard as the mainland, that is to get away from the island. We concentrated on one of the sampans. We made, I reckon, 3, maybe 4 runs, very tight, so that we really were hardly ever out of machine gun range of him during the engagement. We had a few rockets left. I fired those. I don't think I ever got a direct hit, although I think we did do some damage. We did get bunches of hits all around the boat with the flexible machine gun. Sampan went awash. The VC disappeared, whether killed or underwater to try to swim into the brush, I don't know. I doubt very much that we got all of them, if any, because they were pretty good at getting away and, under those circumstances, and the water was quite muddy. We were, nonetheless, credited with the first kill. We continued our flight on down to Canto, where the gun platoon that we had been working with promptly showed up and had to be shown all over the bird, and, of course, the whole business created considerable interest, including, and I'm sure Tommy got a lot more of this than I did, the accolades, envy, or what have you, of the rest of the net team when we got back to Long Bend that night. Well, that's the story. As nearly as I can tell it, I left Vietnam. I said the end of September. It wasn't the end of September. I left on about the 14th, as I remember, so some 10 days after this, and I never really got a chance to see the cobra in action, except on one trip that I made back there in, I guess it was early 70. But I did, of course, follow the actions of the little bird with great interest during the rest of the part of the war, and of course, as the commanding general of Master Corps in Fort Hood during 1970 to 73 period, opportunity to work with the Cobra very closely again in the Air Cavalry Combat Brigade. The Cobra turned out to be a great bird. It was a great program. I'm sure glad we got it for the Army. It, of course, is not the final answer, although it could still be a large part of it in any future conflict. It's a good aircraft, a good program, well run. Bell did magnificent things for the Army, and we can all be grateful to him for the chance they took and the effort they put into providing that weapon for Army aviation. That's the end of my thoughts. If you need anything more, I'll be happy to try to furnish it. Thanks very much. Out.
In a note dated 20 November 1974, which accompanied this tape, General Seneff further noted that he was the first military aviator to fly the prototype Bell Model 209, which of course later became the AH-1G Huey Cobra. This tape contains the recollections of Lieutenant General George P. Seneff, Jr., United States Army, retired. It was recorded in Honolulu, Hawaii in November of 1974. As a part of Research Project 7234 of the American Aviation Historical Society.